C. Corcoran Podcast.
Anthony Scaramucci went off
in a profanity-filled,
expletive-laden interview.
We're talking about F-bombs.
I can't read all the words.
We can at least give you an idea.
Scaramucci said he wanted
to expletive.
Deleted.
Effing kill all the leakers.
Scaramucci referred to Priebus as a quote.
Again, expletive.
Expletive.
Blank.
Blanking.
Blanking.
Bleeping.
Bleeping.
Effing.
Effing.
Paranoid schizophrenic. A paranoiac.
And referred to himself as the mooch.
That was the least foul and offensive thing that Scaramucci said.
Scaramucci also using coarse language to describe senior White House advisor Steve Bannon.
Using an extremely foul term.
With language more fit for the outhouse than the White House.
So sexually explicit.
Such vulgar terms, they cannot be repeated on television.
We'd have to delete so many expletives, you would not understand what the quote meant.
Let me leak the blanking thing and see if I can blank block.
Blank block.
Bleep block these people the way I bleep blocked Scaramucci.
I'm not Steve Bannon. I'm not trying to suck my own expletive.
I'm not trying to suck my own expletive.
I'm not trying to suck my own bleep.
And I'm not going to blank my own blank. I'm not going to keep just saying blanking, blanking.
The president's chief strategist talking about self-fellatio.
How is that even physically possible, number one?
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
And with that, we say hello, good morning, or whatever time it is that you are listening to the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here today at jconline.com for Tuesday, the 11th of May, 2021. Kansas City Chiefs are going to full capacity. I don't know how many people from the St. Louis area became Chiefs fans, or at least Chiefs fans enough to actually get in the car, buy a ticket, drive all the way there, watch games, and get involved in the whole thing. But if you are one of those people, you're going to have a lot of company. This will be heavily criticized. It already is being heavily criticized. But then again, you got to project to, well, I guess August, what, about the second week of August is when they start with the preseason stuff. Although there's, what is it, one less preseason game, or is it there's only one or two? Something, they changed the rule, I can't remember, but they're starting the season about the same time. They have to, because you can't start any earlier than that, because in the warm weather cities, you don't want these guys dropping on the football field. But that's going to be a big story. Speaking of football, the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to sell 11 or 12 more tickets because they're bringing in Tim Tebow, as you probably already heard, not as quarterback, but as a tight end, a position he's never played before. That's what this country is all about now. Tim Tebow can get back into the NFL. Colin Kaepernick can't. Not that this is going to be an entire sports show, but there just happens to be a bunch of sports mileposts today. For example, on this date in 2011, these horrible pictures of Tony La Russa began to surface when he contracted shingles. All right, he's got shingles, and I swear to God, the poor guy looked like Quasimodo. Whatever your feelings are about Tony La Russa, when you see these pictures, it's like, you know, I've never had shingles. I know people who have, and they're like, it's something you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy. That's how painful and how awful the entire thing is. And he's out there trying to manage. And his eyes, I swear he looked like Quasimodo. I'm going to publish a picture on my Facebook page, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, a little bit later on today, one of the pictures that's left over from that ordeal. Another baseball note here today. In 1984, I was just getting ready to pack up and leave for St. Louis. I was living in Buffalo, New York. I'd been there about a year and a half, and I was working at the big rock station there, but I didn't like Buffalo. And I was being forced to work with the biggest horse's ass ever. He was just ruining every single thing we tried to do. He was just this disgusting, backstabbing, two-faced guy who I understand, by the way, has found Jesus since I worked with him. Well, that's a step in the right direction. But as most of you know, I worked on the set of the motion picture The Natural because they were shooting it at the old War Memorial Stadium where O.J. Simpson had all of his greatest games. The place looked like it was built, you know, during the era of the Mayflower. It just, you know, put it this way. That movie was supposed to be set in 1939. I say this not as a joke. It's a true story. They had to do upgrades to the ballpark to make it look like 1939, which is amazing because there was a Buffalo had a, I think it was a double-A team for the Chicago White Sox. They're the Buffalo Bisons. So they were playing in there all summer. They wanted people to pay money and go in there and sit there and watch double-A ball in a stadium that looked like if you sneezed, the upper deck would come falling down. But the producers and the pre-crew, you know, the people who come in and set the stage, do all the construction work, scout out locations and just get the whole place ready so that when the stars and the director and the producer actually come in to start shooting, everything is all sort of set up. Well, these guys, the workers, you know, these union guys are out there War Memorial Stadium starting at, you know, daybreak. They would work all day, and they took a liking to our radio show and our radio station there, 97 Rock, and they played our show throughout the stadium while these guys are, you know, hammering and sawing and doing all sorts of stuff to the stadium to get it ready. So by the time Robert Redford and Glenn Close, Wilford Brimley, all these people, by the time they got there, we were royalty with the production crew and all the union guys. They were shaking their hands. Oh, we've been listening to you guys all summer. You guys are so funny. Thanks very much for coming out. And they, yeah, I got my run of the place. I had no business being there, but I showed up and nobody stopped me. And Robert Redford would bring a football to the set every day, and you could not speak to him. That was the rule, that you could only speak to Robert Redford or any of the stars, but especially Redford. You could only speak to him if he spoke to you first. So sometimes, you know, I'd be standing there and he would just sort of motion to me with the ball, like, start running. I'm going to throw you the ball. So I would just drop whatever I had and I would just run out in the outfield at War Memorial Stadium, and Redford would just, you know, drop one in. And I'd throw it back to him, and maybe he would throw back to me again. Maybe he'd throw to somebody else. That was his way of communicating with you. Because frankly, when you really stop to think about it, if they didn't have a rule like that, I can't imagine how anybody could do their job, could concentrate on business. It'd be impossible. You'd be stopped every 10 seconds. So it sounds at first blush a little on the pretentious side, but it really is practical. You got to do it that way. And then there's a scene in the movie, it's one of the night games, where there's a ball hits a right field and he picks it up and throws it into second base. And they did, you know, I don't know, the first 10 takes or so, and the ball would get thrown by Redford into second base, but then it would just roll all the way to the end of the field. They ran out of balls. Now, again, keep in mind, I got no business even being there, let alone being on the field, let alone having anything to do with the actual movie itself. But I thought to myself, well, it's worth a shot. So I picked up some of the balls, and I picked up one of those gloves, you know, and you want to talk about a new respect for the guys who played baseball in the 30s and 40s with these baseball gloves, that they were like glorified mittens that you would buy at Kohl's or something. I don't know how anybody caught anything with these. So I picked up a glove and a couple of balls, and I went, I stood out at second base. So when Redford threw the ball into second, the ball just didn't go running to the end of the field. They ran out of balls. So I had all the balls and I had the glove and nobody stopped me. So I got to do that too. And on top of all this, they started paying me. I still have the check stubs with the little logo on it that says The Natural Film Company. And they were having lots of trouble keeping people in the ballpark while they were shooting the crowd scenes. They were busing in like church groups and Knights of Columbus and all that sort of stuff. They'd dress them up in 1930s, 1940s garb, and you would sit there. And whenever director Barry Levinson would need a particular angle, like 10,000 people would get up and everybody would sit behind third base. Or then they'd get everybody up and move them behind home plate. Or they'd move everybody out to the outfield. So they had like the same 10,000 people, but they just kept moving them around so it looked like the ballpark was full. And if you've ever seen a movie being made, it is one of the most boring processes you've ever seen. You know, they would shoot a scene sometimes. It would be 45 minutes before they'd shoot the next scene. You got 10,000 people sitting there in the stands watching absolutely nothing. They're getting bored, and some people were leaving and going home, and they were losing the crowd size. So they came to me and they said, hey, we'll pay you. We'll give you a couple of turntables. That was the available technology at the time. Keep in mind, this is 1983. And we'll give you a microphone and just screw around with the crowd. We'll give you some prizes and some sweatshirts and stuff like that. And, you know, prizes, gift. We didn't have gift cards. I'm trying to remember. Gift certificates, I guess it was. Just keep these people entertained. So, you know, in between takes, I had this microphone and I'd be screwing around with the crowd and the whole thing. And at one point, you know, I'd look down and Barry Levinson would just raise his arm like, okay, we're ready to shoot the next scene. And I would cover everything up. I would get out of the shot, me and the crowd, and he would shoot the scene. And then he would wave to me again like, okay, it's going to be a while. I'd grab the microphone again and start fooling around with the crowd. And this went on for 2 weeks. I got paid like $2,000 for this. Plus, I got all the stories, was up close with Redford, Wilford Brimley, Glenn Close. I never saw Robert Duvall, not once. The reason I'm telling you this story right now, by the way, is that this is the anniversary of the premiere in Buffalo, New York, of the motion picture The Natural. What's sad is I went back to Buffalo, I don't know, like 10, 12 years ago, first time I had been back in 30 years. And the ballpark is gone. They knocked it down. And there's just this little plaque. There's a small park. There's hardly any trace of the memory of the shooting of that movie. If it would have been me, what a big statue and everything, you know, and have some fun with it. But the founding fathers and the forces that be in Buffalo, New York, apparently didn't see it that way. The other little piece of trivia on this movie is that Robert Redford was 47 years old when he shot that movie. He was playing a 35-year-old rookie, but he was actually 47. But that's not the fun part of the story. The fun part of the story is that Wilford Brimley, who played the manager in The Natural at the time, was 49. Wilford Brimley, apparently one of those guys who's looked 49 since birth, but people could not believe that, you know, he was playing this old crusty baseball manager who was, you know, supposed to be like in his 60s or something. He was only 2 years older than Robert Redford was at the time they shot the movie. We have yet another anniversary to tell you about, and that is this was my graduation day in 1975, but I didn't go. They wanted me to spend, I think it was like $150. $150 in the year I graduated, 1975, would be like, I don't know, $600-$700 right now for a hat and gown, and you go sit on a hot athletic field outside in the heat, and there was a College of Liberal Arts, and like 4,000 people would stand up and sit down, and I thought that was a dumb idea, a waste of money, and it was complicated by the fact that on that very day, the Eagles and Dan Fogelberg were performing at a big concert venue in Chicago. And so my roommate at the time, who was a year younger than me, he didn't have anything to do. He wasn't graduating. He and I got in the car with our dates, and we went to Chicago's Erie Crown Theater and saw the Eagles and Dan Fogelberg on this date in 1975. To this day, remains one of the best concerts I've ever seen in my life. And to wrap up the big anniversary list of things here today, on this date in 1987, I did my first show, The Breakfast Club, on 93.7 KSD, the classic rock station. 1987. We took that station from playing Captain and Tennille and Barry Manilow records and turned it into a powerhouse classic rock station with a number one morning show. And the rest, as they say, was history. And now this.
Let's also remember that one of the men who is advising Donald Trump is Roger Ailes.
Of course, Roger Ailes of the esteemed PR firm Ailes, Cosby, Polanski, and Gibson. They're good. Trump delegated the whole Bible-y forgiveness angle to the only surrogate not hiding behind a hay bale.
Gosh almighty, you know, he who hasn't sinned throw the first stone here.
I will gladly tell you, Mr. Mayor, I have never said that. I have never done that. I'm happy to throw a stone. I don't know any man. Okay. I've been in locker rooms. I've been a member of a fraternity. I have never heard any man ever brag about being able to maul women because they get away with it. Never.
Poor Jake Tapper. You'd be testy, too, if you just had to spend the day as a human pussy thesaurus.
Grab them by the vagina.
Grab them by the crotch.
Grab them by the, I'm not allowed to say this on MSNBC.
Grab them by the, and he uses a word that begins with P, which is a slang term for a woman's genitalia.
Grabbing women by their private parts.
Grabbing women by their kitty cat, the P word, forgive me.
Grab a woman's genitals.
Grab them by the, I can't say it on television.
Must be so hard to make 24 hours of television without saying the words snatch, cooter, silk purse, spicy taco, lady pocket, white cantaloupe, hoo-hoo trim, the JJ, bearded clam, front bottom, nether region, sin grotto, chocha, red lobster, beaver, fur burger, yoni, downstairs retreat, honeypot, inner sanctum, sugar walls, peach blossom, lady treasure, roast beef curtains, gray gardens. Oh, I almost forgot the most important one. Well, that was literally a vagina monologue. We'll be back with more after this word from the sponsors I hope we still have.
Samantha Bee right there. You ever wonder how people get discovered? You know, back in the 1950s, there's always that story about, it was like Lana Turner or somebody like that was having a strawberry sundae at Schwab's drugstore and was discovered and became a big movie star. And that planted the seed in everybody's mind from sea to shining sea. All you do is you go to Southern California and you sit there and you wait for somebody to discover you. And the next thing you know, you're a movie star. It's not that easy. It does work sometimes. I found this thing on the internet, list of, well, I think there's 11 of these things, people who were quote-unquote plucked from obscurity and turned into movie stars. Danny Trejo was a drug counselor who went to help a recovering drug addict and found himself on the set of Runaway Train. He ended up doing a scene with Eric Roberts, and the rest is history for him. Jennifer Lawrence was discovered as a 14-year-old while vacationing in New York with her family. A scout for a modeling company spotted her. By the end of the summer, she was cast in a TV pilot. Chris Pratt, discovered by Tommy Chong's daughter, Radon Chong, while waiting tables at the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. Rosario Dawson only stepped a few feet outside her house to be discovered. She was chatting with friends when she was seen by Kids director Larry Clark. Lana Turner, there's that story again about the malt shop across from the movie studio. And Charlize Theron was struggling to pay the rent. And one day at a bank, she was going nuts on a teller because they refused to cash her out-of-state check. The guy behind her gave her his card. He was a talent manager. And the next thing you know, she's a movie star. So it does happen. Sometimes you're plucked out of obscurity. Don't get any ideas, okay? People who are already famous appearing on your television tonight. Joel McHale, I'm with Jimmy Fallon. Kimmel's got Heidi Klum. Michelle Obama, I'm with Colbert. Martin Freeman, I'm with James Corden. And Seth Meyers as Amy Adams and Stacey Abrams. What was I telling you about yesterday? The Golden Globes. And what a corrupt little organization it is. And on top of that, it has no diversity of any kind. There hasn't been a black person amongst the, I think it's 86 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. And yesterday NBC comes along and goes, we've had it, we're not doing the show next year, we're not putting it on the air. You come back with some diversity amongst your organization and we'll think about it the year after. Jeff Bezos reportedly spending $500 million on a massive yacht that will have its own support yacht complete with a helipad. So there's a yacht inside the yacht? This story sounds like, you know, when you catch a three-year-old with his hand in a cookie jar and he comes up with this elaborate story that he's making up as he goes as a three-year-old explaining why his hand was actually in the cookie jar but he wasn't really going after cookies and he spins some sort of bizarre tale. You heard over the weekend that the Kentucky Derby winner failed his drug test. And the story they've come up with is that a barn worker took some cough syrup, then peed on some hay, which the horse then ate. And that's why the horse failed the drug test. Any kindergartner could come up with a more plausible story than that. We've had Tom Arnold on the show a couple of different times. Tom grew up in Iowa, but he used to come to St. Louis for Blues games. And, you know, that was sort of like the biggest big city close enough to them within driving distance. So Tom Arnold, as a kid, spent a lot of time hanging around in St. Louis. While all this was going on, his sister, named Lori, was once a major meth dealer in the Midwest. And so now Tom Arnold is trying to get a scripted show about her off the ground. He wants Margot Robbie to play his sister because, in his words, quote, she's a badass. And if you ever saw Tom Arnold's sister, imagine Tom Arnold in drag and imagine a human being about as far away at the other end of the scale, the beauty scale, from Margot Robbie. The story surfacing today is that Bill and Melinda Gates, their marriage broke up because she didn't like his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. And that's not some crazy Inquirer story either. That's been picked up by the major news organizations. Apparently, it's true. The cops in Florida are hunting for a guy who stole a trailer last month with about $12,000 worth of Lynyrd Skynyrd memorabilia inside. The stuff was going to be auctioned off for a charity. The cops know who stole the trailer. They're now trying to track the guy down. On Sunday, we got bears in Kirkwood and Clayton. Why not a tiger in Houston? It belonged to a murder suspect, and before the cops came, he put the tiger in his Jeep, and they took off. The guy was caught last night. He's now facing a felony charge for evading arrest. The tiger, by the way, is missing. Welcome to Houston. And speaking of animals, unfortunately, all those pets that people adopted during the pandemic are now getting returned at record rates. You know, for a long time, I was stuck on those videos that come in from the dodo. If you're on Facebook, you know what I'm talking about, the dodo. And there are all these very, very sweet stories about little dogs and animals and squirrels and raccoons and everything like that that are strays or that were left in houses that got foreclosed. The people moved out and left the damn dog in the house basically to die. Emaciated dogs just, you know, chained to something and left outside to die. No water, no food, no nothing like that. And these animals all get rescued. And, you know, a lot of them are not approachable at all, but they're rehabilitated and they turn out to be normal dogs with happy lives in their forever homes. You know what I'm talking about if you're on Facebook, the dodo. And then it occurred to me one day, hey, wait a minute. These animals all end up with happy endings, but it's all as a result of people, and I use the term loosely, of people who would do that to an animal in the first place, just leave it chained to something, leave and let it die. And for every happy story on the dodo, there's probably 1,000 stories where the animal wasn't found and was left to die and did die. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with people. I swear. And I understand there's hardship. You know, if you're leaving your house because it was foreclosed and you know where your next meal is coming from, I understand all of that. Because if you can't feed yourself and your kids, how are you going to feed your dog? But just chaining it to a pipe and leaving it in the house to die, well, if the first part was your problem, this is not your solution. And so now all these animals who thought they had a nice owner and a nice new home and everything, got them out of the shelter, are being sent back to the shelters because people are getting their lives back as the throes of the pandemic starting to loosen a little bit.
It is Anchorman! Not Anchor Lady, and that is a scientific fact.
I will say one thing for her, Ed. She does have a nice big old behind. I'd like to put some barbecue sauce on that butt and just.
Stop it!
Look at full moon butt. Look at.
One of the funniest movies ever, Anchorman. And I have a theory that the reason that the Anchorman sequel sucked as bad as it did is because they had no idea what made the original Anchorman work in the first place. I think it was a total fluke. And so when they tried to come along and replicate it a couple of years later with all the same people, it just didn't work because they didn't know how to make it work. But I'll save that for a lengthier discussion somewhere down the line. David Koechner, the guy who plays Champ, the guy who plays all of these bizarre roles that you see in comedies, grew up near Columbia, Missouri. Aunt Jackie, by the way, still lives in the O'Fallon, Missouri area. Hi, Aunt Jackie. And if you think you know David Koechner because of the goofy movies he's been in, I think you're in for a surprise. Our JC A-List interview of the day today.
As soon as we told people you were going to be on the show today, everybody started coming out of the woodwork. Listen to this. Ask David about his Mizzou college days making burritos next to another punk college kid named Dave Simons. Dave worked on television here. Now he's in the financial world. Do you remember making Sling and Hash there with Dave?
I sure do. So I remember he was a television journalism major. So he went into finance. Come on, Dave. Don't give up.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, also, dear JC, David's uncle Tip lives across the street from me here in St. Louis. Not only do they look alike, they act alike as well. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, David.
That is a compliment to both of us, yes. Good morning, Uncle Tip, and good morning, Aunt Jeanette. She's also there, working at the Boys Club of St. Charles, I believe.
You're one of those people that not everybody knows the name David Koechner, but as soon as you start reading off the characters that you've played in the movies that you've been in, they're like, well, I know that guy. Pushing Daisies, Monk, Get Smart, King of the Hill, Hannah Montana, Semi-Pro, The Comebacks, Balls of Fury, Reno 911, The Office, Let's Go to Prison, Snakes on a Plane, Talladega Nights, Larry the Cable Guy, Here Comes Peter Cottontail, the movie. We'll ask you about that later. Thank You for Smoking, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Dukes of Hazzard, Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. It goes on and on and on. You work a lot, don't you?
I have to. Yeah, I'm fortunate. I'm very very blessed.
In a lot of these movies, you're playing, I don't want to say the same type of character, but the same type of free spirit. When you were growing up in, Tipton, Missouri, out there, out near Sedalia.
Right.
Is the guy that we're seeing you portray in a lot of these movies somebody that we would know if we visited Tipton, perchance?
They're all Uncle Tip. How about that? Uncle Jim to me, but I know they call him Tip there in O'Fallon. I don't know. I guess, you know, they're all part of me, and each one has a little individual flavor, but clearly they must all have something in common, and in that they're all loud.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let me play a little clip that I think everybody has seen, Ron Burgundy, Anchorman, the legend thing, with Will Ferrell. Let me just play this a 30-second clip. Everybody has seen this scene.
It is Anchorman! Not Anchor Lady, and that is a scientific fact.
Huh? I will say one thing for her, Ed. She does have a nice big old behind. I'd like to put some barbecue sauce on that butt and just. Oh, look at that full moon butt. Look at it.
Do you still want to stick Uncle Tip with that?
I'm sure he likes barbecue.
Yeah. 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 All right, let's talk about this new movie called The Goods. Jeremy Piven and you, and just talk a little bit about the movie and what you play.
We are a mercenary group of car salesmen led by Jeremy Piven, plays Tom the Goods Ready. Anytime you've got cars that aren't moving, you've got a dealership in trouble and they need to move cars, they call these guys, they come in, and with under any means necessary, they will sell the metal.
It sounds like a great premise.
It does. I mean,
there have been other movies made about cars, obviously Used Cars, which was an early Robert Zemeckis movie, and then Cadillac Man, which is a little bit about cars. It was more about psychopathic behavior, the Robin Williams movie with Tim Robbins. But this is one of those things that at face value, it would seem like you got just a lot of material. Anytime anybody's trying to buy a used car, you know, that's instant material.
Right. It's definitely a good jumping off point. It ramps up pretty quickly. It's pretty ridiculous. I don't know if you've ever walked on a lot and encountered any of these guys, because it's probably worse or crazier than any car buying experience that I've had. So it's pretty out there. It's a lot of fun. But the thing is, you know, everybody has in common is that most adults have had some kind of encounter with a car salesman. So it's fun in that we all share that. So there is some shared experience anyone who wants to see the picture will have in seeing this because it's something we've all gone through.
Yeah, everybody's got a story.
David, is there going to be a sequel to Anchorman? And I think I've heard that there could be one. And are you going to be involved?
Yes. I would say it looks good. I can't give you a date, but there are definite determined talks to get that done.
Have you heard anything about a storyline, like where the story picks up or anything like that?
No, there's nothing about that. My guess is they just moved to the next decade. Okay. So we're in the set because we've all kind of moved on to the next decade since we made the film.
Pretty much it.
So it was, let's see, the 1970s, so maybe they moved to the 80s.
All right, we're talking with David Koechner, who majored, by the way, in political science at Mizzou. My God, yeah. David, what were you planning to do with your life back in your college days?
Well, these days, anybody can be president, huh?
Seriously, what were you thinking about doing?
I thought I was going to have a career in politics and that I was going to be out there and I could find a way to help people and make a difference in the world. And then by the time I got to my legislative classes at the University of Missouri, they were pretty dry and boring. I realized, well, I don't want to be a lawyer. I don't want to study the rest of my life all kinds of different arcane pieces of legislation. And I didn't want to teach, so I realized, okay, this isn't going to be for me. But I ended up studying all my life anyway because I had to learn my lines.
And at some point along the way, you learned to slather barbecue sauce in a big old bun. All right, so the movie is called The Goods, Jeremy Piven, David Koechner, homegrown boy. Best of luck to you. Come stop by and see us in St. Louis sometime, okay, David?
Fantastic, I will.
All right, best of luck to you. Thanks.
Okay, peace. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
He was a poli-sci guy. Can you imagine David Koechner managing somebody's campaign for the Missouri legislature? It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And with that, we put the lid on another JC on the Line podcast here for Tuesday, the 11th of May, 2021. We publish every weekday at 7 a.m. absolutely free. Tell your friends we're here, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow morning here. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.